I'm Molly Wansell.
And I'm Geoffrey Wansell.
And for the last 16 years or thereabouts, we have been having lunch every Saturday, and often our conversation turns to murder.
And that's what's prompted us to launch this true crime podcast called Blood Ties.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wansell and I'm here with my father, Geoffrey Wansell.
Hello everyone, welcome back. It's a privilege to be here. It's indeed, it's a delight, though, in these quite complicated times.
Yeah, we haven't had a very successful week, have we, Dad?
Not really. Mo caught the COVID.
Mo's got the COVID.
Yes, but poor old sausage. So we're doing this remotely again.
Yeah, sorry about that. We were meant to be together and recording a very jolly video for our Patreon, but you will still get the video, and Geoffrey is wearing a hat, so...
Yes, I'm wearing a fez, which was actually bought in the Grand Souk in Tunis from a shop that sold only fezes.
Only fezes?
Yes, it's got a very grand box as well. You couldn't get much more authentic than this fez, I promise you. It doesn't look like Tommy Cooper's fez, but it's a fez the Tunisians wear.
You look very chic. You're in red and I'm in green.
Yes.
Because we're festive.
We're being festive for our viewers.
Yeah.
But it has been a bit of a tough week because Mo really hasn't been well. And and it's a worry. And it's right before Christmas and all the plans get messed around and everything's shut down again, and it looks like, oh, I'm not going to go there. I'm just going to try and be positive all the way through this broadcast.
I think we could probably handle it if I didn't have COVID and I wasn't allowed to see any of my family, but there you go.
Yeah,
it is what it is.
It is, I'm afraid, what it is. But it doesn't make it any easier for anyone.
It is what it is.
Yeah. Nevertheless,
here we are.
I was saying to you, Mo, I've watched... all the episodes of The Ripper.
Oh, yes, you did say that.
Which is, I thought, excellent. It was very well done. I know it's caused some controversy because some of the relatives of the survivor of the victims were upset that they used the name Ripper, because I think originally it was to be called Once Upon a Time in Yorkshire. But actually, The Ripper is a better title, to be fair, to the guys who made the programme. And they do it very sensitively and very well. The only thing that was missing was the idiosyncratic Mrs. Sutcliffe, Sonia. But as we've recently done it on the podcast, those of you who've listened recently will know our views about Mr. Sutcliffe. However, this podcast is, well, a result of a competition.
Yeah, so we did our Patreon listeners' choice, and our Patreon members were able to choose between Gianni Versace, O.J. Simpson, and John Lennon, and they voted for John Lennon. So this podcast is going to be about John Lennon. Talking of Patreon, we have two new members, Emma Heathcote and Sean Parry. Will you say their names too, Dad?
Emma Heathcote and
Sean Parry.
Parry, welcome. Thank you. Thank you for your support. It's very important.
Thank you very much.
No, we really mean it. It's very, very important to us. It just helps us to keep this truck on the road. Though here am I sitting in front of two laptops. I feel slightly over-technologied.
You're doing a great job, Dad. You're handling it with great skill.
Thank you. Thank you, darling. So
I'm proud of you.
I think probably we should...
Shall we get going?
What are we going to call
Lennon?
It?
I don't know.
I think we should call it The Murder of John Lennon.
Okay. This is The Murder of John Lennon.
Everyone remembers where they were, at least if they're of that vintage, on the day that John's death was announced. It was December the 8th, 1980, and I was in a flat we then owned in Holland Park in London, and Jan, my wife, was 8 months pregnant with our first child, Dan, who was in fact born exactly 1 month later, on the 8th of January, 1981. Hmm. We can all remember famous events like that. I can remember exactly where I was when JFK was assassinated in Dallas and when Bobby Kennedy was assassinated in Los Angeles. And you can remember the names of those assassins of course, Lee Harvey Oswald. Let's not get into the whole grassy knoll controversy today. And Sirhan. But comparatively few people remember the name of the man who killed John Lennon on that December night in New York City. His actual name was Mark David Chapman. He was 25 years old and he'd come from Hawaii. A lot of in my imagination, I've always thought of Chapman as being rather a short man. He was actually 5'10". He was born in May 1955 in Fort Worth in Texas, the son of a staff sergeant in the United States Air Force and a nurse. Chapman always insisted that he lived in fear of his father, who was physically abusive towards his mother. But certainly by 14, he was using drugs and skipping school. He went to school in Georgia. They moved around because of his dad's job. And he wasn't the brightest boy, I'm afraid, but certainly wasn't impossible. And funnily enough, when he was in Georgia at the age of 16 in 1971, he became a born-again Christian, a born-again Presbyterian. Unlikely, though it may seem. He got his first girlfriend and became a counsellor at summer camp. So far, so upright, you might imagine. You know. But nevertheless, as a teenager, shortly after this conversion, he encountered for the first time J.D. Salinger's wonderful book, The Catcher in the Rye, and its hero, or at least its protagonist, Holden Caulfield, a young man who hates phonies and adultness and always wants to rebel against the world. And Chapman became, well, it would be fair to say, obsessed by Caulfield. He was hard-working, well-motivated. He worked with Vietnamese refugees in the United States. I mean, at one point, President Gerald Ford even shook his hands as a photograph of it. Not, you would have thought, the background of a man who would go on to kill probably one of the most famous people in the world. Anyway, as his years progressed, he moved to Hawaii. He got a bit depressed and was diagnosed with depression, was hospitalised for a while. And then his parents broke up and his mother joined him in Hawaii. But in June 1979, he married a girl, a Japanese-American called Gloria, whom he'd met on a six-week round-the-world trip. He'd gone to Vietnam and Japan and all sorts of places around. And she became his confidant. And yet... barely a year later, he announces to a friend in September 1980, "I'm going nuts," in a letter, and signed it "The Catcher in the Rye." But he didn't have any criminal convictions. He was, to all intents and purposes, an upright, married man in his 20s. He had all sorts of troubles with jobs. He ended up as a night security guard at a hospital where he'd been a printer and he kept falling out with them, and then they'd rehire him again and then he'd fall out. But it was spotty. It wasn't horrible. You know, he wasn't living on the edge of society. But Gloria was to say later he was angry that Lennon would preach love and peace but have millions. And here we have the genesis of the explanation. Chapman himself was to say later, talking about Lennon, "He told us to imagine no possessions, and there he was with millions of dollars and yachts and farms and country estates, laughing at people who had believed the lies and bought the records and built a big part of their lives around his music." So if there is a genesis for that extraordinary killing, that's where it lies. Well, Chapman had decided that he was going to kill Lennon and had purchased a revolver, a 38 special, and ammunition, and originally gone to New York from Hawaii in October 1980 to kill him, but he changed his mind at the last minute and went back to Hawaii. He was raging in his pretense of being Holden Caulfield. He was raging against phonies. Well, perhaps just in case anybody doesn't know anything about Lennon, and I can't imagine there are very many who don't, his story has been pretty well told. His merchant seaman father was absent, and from the age of five, he was brought up by his aunt Mimi. And when he was 17, his mother Julia was killed by a car. In fact, he went on rather eerily to call Yoko Ono, his second wife, who was 7 years older than him, mother, in an affectionate tone of voice.
He was born in Liverpool, is that right?
Liverpool, yes, forgive me. I take all this for granted because I brought up as a teenager with the Beatles, you know.
You were right there.
I was, and yes.
Did you see them play live?
I never saw them play live. No, I went to a couple of things that they were at.
Did Mum see them play live?
I don't think she did. I saw the Stones live, but I never saw the Beatles live. Mm. They were part of my childhood. I mean, absolutely.
And mine.
Yeah, and yours. Yeah. They were the most famous people on the planet. And Lennon was almost certainly one of the most famous men on the planet. He had bought an apartment in the Dakota, which is a famous apartment building on the Upper West Side in New York, West 72nd Street and Broadway. It's a very eerie building, actually. In fact, if you remember the movie Rosemary's Baby, which Roman Polanski shot, starring Mia Farrow, it was all shot in the Dakota. It's a very spooky place. Mm. It's very beautiful. I mean, and a very expensive apartment. So big, huge. And Lennon had two. He was kindly man in many ways. And that's what this killing, in a way, is so poignant, makes it so poignant. So Chapman flies back from Hawaii to New York on December the 6th and by a remarkable coincidence encounters the singer James Taylor in the subway, and they'd actually been in the same psychiatric institution together several years earlier. And Chapman begins to talk to Taylor in a very loud voice, and Taylor thinks, this man's a bit potty. You know, yes, I recognised him vaguely, but he's sort of slightly strange. Anyway, Taylor and Chapman part, and Chapman is staying in the Sheraton. And on the morning of the 8th of December, he goes out and buys a new copy of Catcher in the Rye and signs it, "This is my statement," and added Holden Caulfield. He puts it in his pocket, along, one has to say, with the .38 revolver, and takes off for the Dakota, where he stays outside for most of the day, talking to the other fans, because lots of fans used to gather outside, because Lennon was famous for coming out and signing autographs and saying hello to people. And in fact, at one point, he misses Lennon getting out of a taxi and going into the Dakota, but sees Lennon and Yoko's son, Sean, with the nanny. And Chapman says to Sean, "Oh, you must be the boy," and shakes his hand.
No way.
It's quite an eccentric story. Anyway, that afternoon, he's still outside, Chapman's outside, and he's talking to the doorman, and he's talking to the other fans, he's talking to people passing by, and no one really suspects very much that he's, apart from just a fan. So that afternoon, the famous photographer Annie Leibovitz is going to the Dakota to photograph John and Yoko for the cover of Rolling Stone. It became one of the most famous final photographs. It's the one where Yoko's fully clothed and John is lying on top of, beside her, naked. It was a famous cover of Rolling Stone. At about 5 o'clock, she takes the photographs, goes away. About five, John and Yoko set off for the record plant studio. And on the way, they pass Chapman. Well, Chapman is carrying a copy of Lennon's recent double album, Double Fantasy. And he asks Lennon to autograph it for him, which Lennon duly does. And as Chapman was to say later of Lennon, he was very kind to me, ironically, very kind and very patient with me. He really was. Chapman went on to say he was a very cordial and decent man.
Why did he shoot him then?
Quite. Lennon spent several hours at the studio, and at about 10:50, their limousine drew up outside the Dakota, the West 72nd Street entrance to the Dakota. It didn't go into the courtyard. It drew up outside because Lennon had decided that he wanted to go back to say goodnight to his son, Sean, before they both went to the Stage Deli, which features, of course, in Mrs. Maisel and many other events. He gets out of the car. Yoko gets out first and walks into the, through the archway. And again, I do recommend you have a look at the scene. It's very important. Chapman tries to say something to Yoko, but she doesn't respond. Lennon might have recognised him. We don't know. We can't be sure. Anyway, Lennon goes past Chapman, and Chapman removes the revolver, which he's been keeping in his pocket, which is loaded with five hollow point slugs that are designed to expand on impact and are almost always lethal. And he's about 9 or 10 feet behind Lennon. Lennon's got his back to him. He's walking towards the entrance, the security entrance of the Dakota, following Yoko. And Chapman fires five times. He misses Lennon once, and it breaks a window in the Dakota, but he hits Lennon four times in the back, the left side. Lennon staggers, tries to regain his balance, lurches towards, stumbles towards the entrance to the reception and security, and manages to say, "I'm shot. I'm shot." He's mortally wounded. There is blood now everywhere. The doorman, a very nice Jose Perdomo, who was in fact a Cuban, rushes out and summons another member of staff, and they have a look at him, and he's clearly very badly wounded indeed. And I mean, they were going to try and apply a tourniquet, but they couldn't because there was so much blood. So they very thoughtfully removed his glasses, which were spattered with blood, and laid a coat, in fact, a part of the uniform of the doorman, over Lennon. The cops had been called, and the first pair arrived within 2 minutes. Yoko is by this time screaming, "Help me, help me, help him, he's been shot, he's been shot. Somebody come quickly." Well, there's nothing really anyone can do for Lennon, and the two policemen who were first on the scene realise how badly hurt he is and decide not to wait for an ambulance but to put him in the back of their squad car, their cruiser, and drive him directly to the Roosevelt Hospital on West 59th Street, the nearest hospital. He gets there just before 11. Before he does so, the doorman, Perdomo, looks at Chapman, who's still standing there. He's dropped the gun. He's standing there perfectly still. And Perdomo says, do you know what you've done? And Chapman says very calmly, yes, I just shot John Lennon. He then proceeds to take off his coat and take the copy of The Catcher in the Rye out of his pocket and start reading it.
What, just standing there?
Yep. In the archway of the Dakota. Clearly waiting for the police.
Yeah.
The police arrive. This is my statement written inside it. Well, there can't be any doubt what's happened. You've got Perdomo saw Chapman. Perdomo asked Chapman, do you know what you've done? Chapman says, yes, I just shot John Lennon. And so they handcuffed Chapman and put him in the back of their cruiser. This is the second set of officers to arrive because the first set have taken John Lennon to the Roosevelt Hospital. When he got to the hospital, to the A&E, he was not breathing and had no pulse. Now, there's enormous amounts of speculation about what really went on at the Roosevelt Hospital that evening. Much of it is mythology. There was one surgeon who insisted that he operated on him. Another surgeon said he hadn't, that he hadn't been properly treated. I think the honest truth of the matter, and the most obvious solution, to be honest, is that it was clear that poor John Lennon had been mortally wounded. And in fact, he'd lost 80% of his blood. And he was declared dead on arrival at 11:15 p.m. that night. There are also all sorts of myths associated with what Yoko did that when she got to the hospital with David Geffen, the boss of Geffen Records. Some say she banged her head on the floor, the concrete floor. She's always denied that. She was certainly upset, but she asked the hospital not to announce John's death until she'd had a chance to go back to see her son, Sean, who was watching, believe it or not, Monday Night Football on American television. Well, it was a good job she did get back to warn Sean, because famously, the football commentary was interrupted by the famous Howard Cosell, who was the voice of American football, saying, we've just heard that John Lennon's been killed. It puts football into perspective. It's very poignant. The following morning, Yoko issued a statement saying, there's no funeral for John. John loved and prayed for the human race. Please do the same for him. Love, Yoko and Sean. There was no funeral. John was cremated. There was an outpouring of grief that was literally staggering around the world. At least three long-time Beatles fans killed themselves as a result of John's assassination. Now, there's all sorts of speculation about what really was going on in Mark Chapman's mind. In a new book, the best-selling writer James Patterson asserts firmly that Chapman's motive was, and he quotes, I assassinated him because he was very, very, very famous, and that's the only reason. And I was very, very, very much seeking self-glory, very selfish. Now, that is not exactly the version that Chapman himself has given. It's an explanation, a possible explanation, but there's also something very strange in Chapman's psyche, this preoccupation with Holden Caulfield, the fact that he was always angry with his wife that she didn't report him to the police because she knew he had a gun and bullets. But it's all a mystery. But the one overwhelming detail is that there was no logical explanation for this assassination. It wasn't done for money. It wasn't done for, you could say, it was done for madness. At one point, Chapman was, of course, arrested, charged with second-degree murder. It was interesting, he wasn't charged with first degree. The assumption being that he hadn't premeditated it. Well, I felt pretty premeditated to me. After all, he took a gun with him, which was loaded, and he'd bought specially. And in 1981, he was given 20 years to life. He became eligible for parole in 2001, but is still in jail. He's been denied parole 11 times. And he's still in jail. His next parole hearing comes in 2022. Yoko has always campaigned against Chapman's release. Chapman is now 65. Again, I recommend a look at him. He looks incredibly ordinary. He's rather round-faced, a little pudgy. No doubt 40 years of jail does that. Slightly staring eyes. But what happened to Lennon and the events surrounding it are still, to some extent, shrouded in mystery. Yoko, who is now 87 and still living in the Dakota, she didn't move out of the flat, is now virtually a recluse. The only time she's ever seen in public is when she's being wheeled in a wheelchair, and she's handed over running the substantial Lennon fortune to their son Sean. I mean, it's been estimated that Lennon is worth a minimum of $800 million and is still now the 13th richest person still recording of those who are dead.
Wow.
He represents for, and I think this is the way I would like to end it, I can remember when Buddy Holly was killed and died in the plane crash. And I can remember Don McLean's song, Bye Bye Miss American Pie, the day the music died. There's an element of that in John and in this particular murder. So I hope that illuminates the story of the murder of John Lennon.
The murder of John Lennon. It's just so sad, isn't it?
It is.
Very sad. Such a shame.
And so such a waste of such a talent, such a waste of such an enormous talent.
Yeah. And it can't be easy to be so famous. I did what, you know, it must be so hard. You to get murdered because you're famous. It's not something you choose, fame. It's not, well, I mean, it is in a way, but, you know, it's a byproduct of talent. You know, it's not,
yeah.
You know, you don't, of course, there are people now who seek out being famous for nothing, but, you know, those four were just really talented, and obviously he was particularly talented amongst them.
Yeah.
You don't then lay like, oh, I want to be the most famous person in the world, I want to be the richest person in the world. You know, you step out to start a band, you just want to make music.
I think that's what George Harrison once said. I didn't want all this, I just wanted to be in a band.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, you know, they already had so much of their normal life ripped away from them. We don't live in a normal way, you know, so to be killed because of that seems mightily unfair on top of everything else.
Yes. It is a deeply moving story. You can see why people are moved by it, because it was such a, it snatched away from him when he had so much more still to give. You know, the man who wrote Imagine, so much more to give. And
yeah, so it is just a very tragic story.
It is. It you know, even now, 40 years later, it resonates, doesn't it? It's got something particularly powerful about it. And you can see why our Patreon members wanted to you know, the vote for that.
Yeah, he means a lot to a lot of people, and their music will continue to mean a lot to a lot of people, even though obviously there must be generations of people now who don't know who John Lennon is.
Yes. Well, I mean, 40 years is quite a long time. There'll be a lot of people, young people, for example, who never listened to the Beatles when they were young. And didn't really listen to Lennon. But the fact that he still sells enormous numbers of records and songs, I mean, the Lennon-McCartney songbook, which was purchased by Michael Jackson, is still generating massive amounts of income.
Money, yeah. Oh, well, there you go.
But Lennon was something iconic. There was something iconic about him.
Yeah, he is one of those ones, isn't he? He's one of those special ones.
Yeah, that you know, it's not like some others. And now there are only two survivors, only McCartney and Ringo of the group. It's extraordinary.
What's your favourite Beatles song, Dad?
Oh, dear.
Favourite Beatles album, if that's
Hard. Favourite Beatles album, Sgt. Pepper. Favourite Beatles song. Difficult. For the benefit of Mr. Kite?
I'll Follow the Sun's mine.
I Follow the Sun, yes. Long and Winding Road.
I do like Blackbird a lot.
Yep.
Dan used to play Blackbird when we were at home together.
Yeah, yeah. Favourite Lennon song, I suppose, has got to be Imagine.
How could it not be?
Probably one of the great anthems of the 20th century.
For sure.
Even though perhaps you could argue that it cost him his life. Well, let's move on to something a little more cheerful, darling.
Yes, well, thank you very much. And thank you to all our listeners and all our Patreon members and all of you for supporting us for 2020. It's not been easy.
No.
We can't really
talk about the future because we're all locked down pretty much again.
No, we don't know what the future is necessarily, but we're the right side of it, even if we are all locked down and there's COVID everywhere, including me.
Yeah. I think that we are on the downhill side, but it's going to get bleaker before it gets better, before they roll out the rest of the vaccine and before we get on top of it.
Has your GP surgery contacted you about the vaccine yet, Dad?
They have indeed. I got a text this week saying, please don't contact us. We have you know, we'll contact you.
You're on the list.
I was very impressed, actually. I mean, I'm 75, so... you know, but I really was impressed by that. Yeah, here we go. When appropriate, you will receive an invitation to book. Please do not call us to get an appointment until you are invited. Anything else, your GP surgery is open, and if you need to get in touch, please ring us or visit our website. So, you know.
Nice.
But you've had good experience with your GP.
Oh, yeah. My GP called me and said, I hear you tested positive for COVID. How are you feeling?
You said
so that was nice. I said I don't feel that great. Also, just to flag, my friend Megan did make eggnog for us to drink during this podcast, but I can't taste or smell anything. So,
well, we'll celebrate. What are we doing now? Are we going on? I mean, are we going to do some more or what?
We'll have a break for Christmas and then we'll pick up again in the new year at some point, probably towards the end of January, I guess.
Okay.
I have a couple of weeks off.
Well, you could do with 2 weeks off.
Yes, I could. Yeah. I could, yeah. And then we'll pick up again. So, you know, obviously, please keep writing to us any subjects that you'd like us to cover. We do have a whole bunch of new suggestions from people, so I'll gather them all up.
Wonderful.
And put them together, and yeah, we'll get on to 2021.
Yes, I was looking again at that thing we recorded for CrimeCon. It was the night before Christmas.
We did I'll put it on the Instagram. I actually haven't done it yet. We did record a Christmas video for CrimeCon, didn't we, Dad?
Yes, which I
liked. We read a poem.
I rather liked.
It was good. It was cute.
Yeah, it was nice.
I think it was. It was good.
And that's, we're doing stuff for them next year.
I'll do CrimeCon.
All we can say is let's hope 2021 is a little cheerier than 2020 has been.
A little brighter.
A little brighter.
But all we can do mainly, is hope. Thank you, Dad, for all your hard work for the whole year. So much appreciated. And, you know, keeping me and all the listeners entertained. And I hope that people have found some solace in our weekly chats.
I hope
even
so.
Though sometimes they're a bit miserable. But I think people like the chat, you know.
I do too. And I think it's nice for them to realise that, you know, that we are human, that, you know, you can get nasty diseases. You've got to be careful. Mm. I'm being very careful, but at your encouragement, darling, after all, you know, you encourage me to be as careful as I am, and wisely, I think.
Yeah, because I don't know how I got it, so you do have to be careful.
Yeah, well, I am being
including in the shops and everywhere.
Yeah, I'm being as careful as I possibly can be, I do assure you.
Good.
You know, and I haven't gone into anybody else's house or mixed or, you know, at all. And I'm not going, you constantly tell me my predictions are bad, so I'm not going to make any predictions at all.
I don't constantly tell you that. It's just that, you know, we've just gone from, you know, it'll be over by, and it's never over.
It's never over.
It never ends.
Well, we're going to get a bit more never ending before we get out of the ending, so to speak.
Yeah.
Tier four, here we come.
We'll get there.
Anyway, Mo,
well,
thank you.
Thank you, and as usual,
happy Christmas. We must wish everybody a happy
Christmas.
Oh
yes, and a very merry Christmas and a happy New Year.
Yeah, and a very good
to
New
everyone.
Year to everyone.
What will you be watching, Dad? It's a Wonderful Life.
Probably. I know.
White Christmas?
Either or both. I love them.
Why not? You've got the time.
They're great, great Christmas movies. Great.
Yeah.
I like Home Alone too. The original Home Alone.
I know. I'm definitely going to watch Home Alone. That's on your Disney Plus, by the way, if you want to watch it.
Is it, by Jove? Oh, we'll have a look.
I haven't
even got into Disney Plus yet. Crikey.
It's on your Disney Plus, which is also where Muppet Christmas Carol, my favourite Christmas movie, is.
Oh.
Michael Caine's finest work.
Michael Caine. I think he'd be a bit upset with that.
I don't.
Oh, I think of lots of Michael Caine's finest work.
He's a fabulous Ebenezer Scrooge.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I love the Muppet Christmas Carol so much.
Good. Oh, I like Caine in Get Carter, Zulu.
Yeah.
The Impress File. Oh, I mean.
Italian Job.
Italian Job. I only asked you to blow the bloody doors off. Yeah, you know, it's wonderful, wonderful.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, Mo, I'm going to wish you a happy Christmas too, because we're not going to be able to get together.
No, we won't be able to.
We're isolating.
Well, I wish you a very merry Christmas. Yes, I shall be here. But I've got Betsy, so it could be worse.
That's great. Well, give Betsy a hug from me. And let's thank all the people who we need to thank.
Yes, thank you so much to our producer, Sam Brain, who does everything to make all of these things possible, and to my brother, Dan, who wrote the music, my friend George, who did our caricature, to Audio Boom for hosting us, and to Jeffrey for doing all the hard work, and to you, the listeners, very Merry Christmas. Without you, we're nothing.
Thank you so much. Thank you, thank you, and a Merry Christmas. And as I always say, and true of John Lennon, bad things happen to good people, so do please be careful out there.